Hello, everybody. People are starting to file in. Can you guys?
Yeah, sorry.
So you guys are a lot. Or our friends are a lot. So he's like.
Oh, hold on here. How do I get you guys on mute?
Cool.
I need to apologize in advance. Zoom is always like a. I'm just getting everyone on mute here. We'll wait another minute for people to pile in. Hey, Gwen. Hey, Carolyn. Hi, Tanya. Hi, Kendall. Hi, Carolyn. Hi, Sharon. Hi, Marlene. Hi, Souza. Get myself off video here for a second. Probably gonna turn it off for most of our day, but just so you can see me smiling and saying hello. All right, hi, Sandra. I know a lot of people were on vacation this week, so we're gonna be a small group, but it's actually better for what we're gonna be doing today, so. That's going to be great. All right, well, I'm going to get started and hopefully more people will pile in as they pile in. I'm really excited for our day today. I'm going to be teaching a process today that a bunch of you have been asking me to teach for a while because you've witnessed me. Hey, Michelle. You've witnessed me use it when I've been coaching. And you're like, how do I do that? I want to be able to do that. That was so powerful. And so I'm really excited that we're going to be looking at it today. It doesn't really have a name. Sometimes I call it like the choose your path process. It's sort of like a somatic shadow experience process. So before we get in, I just want to share, you guys got emails about this, but it's kind of like two small groups that are coming together in part today. I think half of one group is here and half of the other group is here. Some of you already know each other. You've all been through Sacred Depths or are almost finished with Sacred Depths. Some of you are coaching each other. I've got people from Advanced Sacred Depths here today, and the people in Advanced Sacred Depths are the one-on-one coaches for certification in Sacred Depths this year. And we've got people from Level 2 in Sacred Depths this year. So, you know, part of the day I'm going to be teaching, it's going to be really interactive. We're going to all be doing practicing the second part of the day. And when I break us out into breakout rooms, it gets broken up randomly. So some of you might end up coaching people that have coached you in the past. But I think it's all good. If you're here, like me, you're on a path of continuous learning and continuous up-leveling. And even coaches that are experienced are constantly learning and upping their game. So we're going to be practicing all of that today. The process that I'm going to be sharing with you today is one that, while I've kind of developed it in a way on my own, it wouldn't be fair to say, and it wouldn't be in integrity to say, that it's completely on my own. And I always really like to honor where I get ideas from, and things that I create, you know, they're always evolved from somewhere else. And in particular for today, for a long time, I worked with a practitioner who specialized in eidetic imagery. Eidetic is spelled E-I-D-E-T-I-C-S. And eidetic imagery was developed by someone named Dr. Ahmed Akter. I believe it's spelled A-K-T-E-R. And while the visualizations that we did together weren't exactly what I'm teaching you today, there's definite strands and pieces that come from it. And eidetics is just a really cool modality. So I just wanted to put that out there and also honor some of the pieces where this comes from. And of course, it comes from all of my training and learning and understanding of shadow. And I'll explain how, and you'll see that as we get into it. So this process that we're going to be looking at today is one that's really, really powerful if you've got a client that is in a stuck place. If you've got a client that you've done kind of a lot of mental level coaching, like talk coaching around limiting belief or fears, and this client still isn't taking action, or still not feeling great, still holding themselves back, this is a process that you may want to use with them. And it's one that I've seen can really work wonders. Now, of course, nothing is a magic pill. And at the end of the day, we'll talk about the follow-up that's needed from this process, because I just going to keep on hammering in the difference between a breakthrough and a transformation. The process that I'm going to teach to you today, it creates a ton of breakthroughs, and it almost makes you as the practitioner, when done masterfully, it almost makes you seem like a magician. It's sometimes to me, I'm like, ooh, this is like parlor tricks that are, it's like so much can happen, and it's great. And you can leave the client there and they'll have new understandings and new ideas and new feelings. But if you want them to really see the transformation, you're going to have to ask them to follow up, and we'll talk more about that later. But anyway, this is a process that can be used if you've got a client in a stuck place. Hold on one second. I see that Kelsey just emailed me that she can't get on, and I want to make sure she CC'd someone on my in my team to help her. Let me just get Sarah involved in that so she can get on. One second here. Sarah, okay. Sarah, please help Kelsey. Okay. So those are the circumstances that you're going to maybe want to use this process. If you've got a client where it's like you've talked through, you've done rewire negative thought patterns, you've looked at befriending fear, and you can do it before you do these processes too. You've done those pieces, but you feel like she needs or they need something deeper, something more to go into their body, even more than the befriend your fear process. This process, as you'll see, is what it's about is unearthing parts of yourself or parts of your client that got buried under history. So what that means is, hey Kalea, what that means is what? That Hi. Parts of ourselves as we go through our lives, our childhood, our teenage years, our adulthood years, we're all born with confidence. We're all born with motivation. We're all born with, I can name 25, probably 100 things here, all of these different elements. But sometimes as we go through our lives, because of certain experiences, those experiences get buried under history. And this has happened to all of us, we're confident we're confident, like we're born with that because we're all naturally born with it. And then there's a situation that happens at school with a bunch of girls or, you know, whatever it is, with a former employer, that just crushes it. And that energy of confidence gets buried under the history. And then we have less access to that natural energy, whatever it is, joy, happiness, motivation, confidence, self-love, you know, all of these anger, right? It's like that history gets buried on top of it and we have less access because there's layer or multiple layers of history. And so the process that I'm going to teach you today is a way of kind of poking through and removing some of that, those layers to unearth that natural energy, whatever it is that your client is needing in order to feel better, in order to take the actions that she wants to take. And the way that this process does this, there's kind of two ideas working together in this process. So one is through the process, you help the client lean into her impulses, or I would say lean into her shadow places. A lot of times what got buried under history becomes the shadow, right? Because we've either rejected it or we've lost it or we're not paying attention to it. We think it's bad in some way. So there's a lot of shadow work that's happening as you, through the process, and I'll show you how to do this, help your client lean in to those places. The other thing that's working in this process is that in order for anyone to act differently, they need to feel differently. I'm going to say that again. In order for anyone to act differently, they need to feel differently. Action is usually the last step in a series of thoughts and feelings. And then we take an action. So sometimes the best way to help clients act differently, to follow up on the things they want to follow up on, to do it without self-sabotage or, you know, whatever it is to help them feel differently. And that's really what this process does, is it creates new memories, new body memories that create new feelings. At the same time, it's also creating new neural pathways, simply by virtue of the fact that it's a visualization, and in the visualization, they're visualizing new possibilities that they hadn't before. But again, this is where I go back to the difference between breakthrough and transformation. With a new body memory and a new neural pathway, it's all fine and good to create it once. But if you want it to stick, you have to come back to the practice of it. So I'm going to keep on like bringing that back in today. And we'll talk about, again, the follow-up and the practice, all of that. I think one other thing I want to say about the shadow aspect of this, and again, I'm going to do a demo and we'll break it all down and we're going to get into more of the crags, but I'll try to like explain as much as I can going in. Part of the, how do I want to say this? Part of connecting into impulses or supporting clients to connect into impulses is supporting them in the safety of the session and of the visualization and of the process, is supporting them to connect in to impulses that they may find unsavory. So sometimes as we hold the space for this process, we're going to want to encourage our clients to lean in, for example, to their anger and to visualize themselves getting really angry in the situation, maybe verbally, maybe even physically. Again, it's not because they're going to do this in the outside world, but it's so that they can own this, so they can own their anger more. If they can own it in the space, then the anger doesn't have to sabotage them out in the world, either onto themselves or others. Sometimes we may even, in the visualization, we may want to help the client lean into jealousy or competitiveness. Again, not to be jealous in the outside world, but so that they can pierce through and own the gold of that and then take it back out into the world. Let me pause here, and I want to see if I just want to make sure that point makes sense to you guys. And I'm just texting Sarah because Kelsey still can't get it in. All right. Any questions on that? You can just take yourself off mute if you got a question, if you've got one for me. Everybody good on that so far? Okay, this will all become more clear as we move through. The process, you're never gonna do it without coaching. Let's say you've got a 45-minute coaching session. You're probably gonna spend 10 minutes going in, just the client is going to tell you, I haven't made progress on this, or this is still holding me back, or, you know, whatever coaching you're going to do. And then from there, you'll move into the process. And then from there, you'll want a few minutes to process out. Gwen, I'll pop those in during break. Gwen is asking about resources. It's called eidetic imagery, and this is not exactly eidetic imagery, but I just wanted to honor that it sort of sparked these ideas for me. And I'll pop in the notes how to spell that in a little bit. So you're going to want to spend the first part of a session. The way the process works is it starts from a memory that the client has already experienced. So we're going to start with a memory that has actually happened in real life. And as we lead the client through this process of creating new body memories, of leaning in to their impulses, of creating the new neural pathways, we're going to pretty quickly diverge from the memory into this choose your own path place, into finding the new possibilities. And I'll help you, you'll see step by step, I'll model that for you. Now, here's a really important point with this. I know some of the people on the call today are coaches and therapists, and so this may not apply for you. But if you're not a therapist, or I'll just say, like, for me, in terms of my understanding of what's within the scope of coaching, I won't use a memory that is traumatic for my client, because I just don't feel like that's in the scope of my practice as a coach. So if my client, for example, has been physically abused, I'm not going to use that memory in this process, because I don't have all the tools that I need as a coach versus being a therapist in case some other things come up for that client. So you want to use memories. They can be painful, they can be hurtful, they can even still be triggering, that's fine. But if there is a history, particularly of any kind of abuse, I don't like to go into those memories. One of the things that's really important, and for those of you that have witnessed me coaching this process, one of the things that's really important is you don't want your clients to be smarty pants as you're moving through the process. And you guys have heard me say this if you've observed me leading this or I've led this for you. So what I mean by that is a lot of the times when we're coaching, we want to analyze, right? We're analyzing, you know, and our clients are analyzing and we're connecting the dots and we're like using all of those smarty pants kind of tools and muscles. And our clients are as well. Our clients are very smart. The way that this process is most effective is if they take their analysis hat off and they are in the space of experiencing. This is about seeing and feeling and seeing and feeling. And so part of your job as the facilitator of this process is to continually remind your client to see and feel, to get out of their connect the dots place and their analyzing and coachy place in their heads as they move through, but to be in the experience. It's really hard to help someone tap into their impulses if they're analyzing. That makes sense? It's almost like they're, I don't want to say they're opposite ends of each other, but like it's just when we're analyzing, we're not in our body and feeling into our impulses. One of the things that is fun about this process is that it doesn't adhere to reality. So we start with a memory based in reality. And as I said earlier, we divert from that. But also we can encourage the impulse to be something real, like have a conversation with this person or leave the room or stomp. But it can also, because it's impulse, it can also be fantasy, like grow wings and fly, right? Whatever it is. And that is obviously rich with metaphor for clients if they come up with that. So I think that's all of the background information I'm going to give. We'll get to, you know, we'll break it down a lot more as we go through the day. But I think at this point, what's going to be most helpful is for me to do a demo. And then, so you guys can observe kind of all of these theoretical things that I'm talking about. Some of you probably are like, what is going on here? And then we can break it down more. So who would like to volunteer to go through the process? I saw Sandra. I can't see everybody on my screen, by the way, but I think I saw Sandra's hand raised. Did you raise your hand, Sandra?
Yeah, I did. So did Gwen, though, so you can pick either of us.
Well, I saw you first, so I'm going to go with you.
Fair enough.
Awesome. Okay, I usually do this on the phone while I'm pacing around my downstairs. I have us on Zoom today because that's how I can break you guys into groups, but I'm going to take the video off on me so I can like get in the zone. And if you want to do the same
thing. I'm going to do the same thing.
Yeah. And I really recommend actually everybody taking themselves off the camera just for right now. Cause what I want you guys to do as you guys observe the conversation between me and Sandra, you'll all have your coaching hats on. You're going to be listening for technique and all of that, but see if you can put yourself into Sandra's visualization and moments too. It will be helpful for you. So let's all just stop our videos for a little bit here. And hello to everybody that came in. Kelsey, I'm glad you got in. Adina, it's good to see you. Said hi to Kalea. Awesome. All right, Sandra, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, great. I'm just taking a sip of water. So tell me, obviously, you know, if it was a coaching session, we wouldn't go into it exactly like this, but, you know, for the sake of the training today, talk to me about a place where you're feeling stuck. Yeah, talk to me about a place where you're feeling stuck.
So you can tell me to not pick this one if you want, but I am feeling stuck around some imposter syndrome type stuff with offering the Ayurvedic knowledge I have in a coaching format.
Yeah. Talk a little bit more about that. What's coming up?
So if I like lean into like all of this, the stories that are in my head, what comes up is this desire to stay in integrity. My inner voice is very savvy, right? She's too smart. She wants to stay in integrity. And there's a story around like people study Ayurveda for their whole lives, right? And I'm like, you know, I'm a baby in that world. And like I've never been to India. I'm not like practicing with a particular doctor. Like I'm just sort of starting to dip my toe into it. And so that's sort of the space that I'm in.
Yeah, got it. Is it, just for clarification, is it actually true that you're just starting to dip your toe in it? It was my understanding that even though you haven't been teaching it, I mean, this has been something that's part of your life for a little bit now.
That is a true statement. I've been studying it on and off. I guess I first was exposed in some depth maybe 5 years ago, and then I've been more conscious of it and like for the last 3 years, and then 3 or 4, and then actively practicing probably for most of the last 2 or 3 years. It's been a gradual leaning in, if you will.
Yeah. So this isn't like a fly-by-night thing for you.
No.
Okay, good. I just cognitively, I want you to just own, recognize that. And own that, right? So yeah. It's true that there are practitioners who have been practicing for, you know, 20, 30 years, and you have less experience than them. Like, that is a true statement, but it's also a true statement that this has really been a big part of your life for a while now, and you've been studying it for a while.
Yes.
Okay, awesome. And it sounds to me, tell me if I'm getting this right. I think you use the word imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. So that kind of, and I'm guessing that that's not new for you.
No.
Okay. So do you want to do some work on this?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, awesome. Take a moment and close your eyes, or you don't even have to close your eyes, but for a moment, think of a time from when you were younger that this imposter syndrome came up.
Oh, wow, that's so funny. I'm moving to sit in my other chair, so let me know if you can't hear me, but what popped into my head was like in elementary school, I was asked to dance in like some sort of whatever talent show, I guess, like a recital. And I ended up not doing it. That's like the short version, but I can elaborate.
Yeah, elaborate. I want to hear more
about what. So the challenge I faced in that particular moment, like I had been dancing ballet for years, but I'd never really choreographed anything on my own. And I was probably like 8 or 9. So like logical adult brain can look back and say like, I just didn't know how to ask for help with that. And I asked my mom, and you know, my mom's a computer programmer essentially. So like getting help choreographing a ballet recital, just wasn't going to pan out probably the way I wanted. Mm-hmm. But I have this very distinct memory of like trying to get her to understand what I was doing. And her feedback was just so ridiculously logical. Like now I can look back and it's sort of comical to me, but I also am still remember feeling that heartbreak in that moment. And like, oh, I'm not good enough to do this was basically the message that I walked away with.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you remember what was the feedback that she gave you? Just curious.
So it was like so super specific, and like I was, when you're choreographing, like you do certain movements to like move you around the stage because you don't want to be standing still. Mm-hmm. And to her like logical sort of engineering brain, it just didn't seem efficient.
Yep. Got it. Do you remember where you were also?
When our living room.
Your living room. Okay, great. So this feels like a good, I think this is a good memory for us to work with.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I lost you. Are you there, Sandra? Can anybody else hear me? Oh, are you there, Sandra?
Can you hear me?
Okay, now I can. Yeah,
yeah, I think my headset got a little weird. Hang on one second. But yeah, I think that's a good memory. I'm game to work with that.
Awesome. Okay, so is your headset all set?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So take a moment, close your eyes. And be in that living room in your house as your 8 or 9 year old self. And in fact, I want you to be in your 8 or 9 year old body. And I want to remind you of what I said before, try not to be smarty pants here. What's most important is for you to look and feel and see and feel and just look through those 8 year old eyes and then feel. And I'm going to keep on reminding you to do that.
Okay.
So be in your 8 year old body, sitting in the living room with your mom there. And tell me, just also, what do you look like? Like, what are you wearing? What do you look like?
So I'm like a pretty tiny kid. I had long, like super long dark hair, probably pulled back like, in a bun, in a ponytail or a bun of some sort. And, I'm sure I was wearing like pale pink tights and my black leotard because that was like the uniform. Mm-hmm. And I have this vague memory of like, you know, my brother and sister being around. They weren't like, they're not like per se part of the memory, but just I could tell mom was sort of distracted. Like I had her attention, but barely.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Okay, good. And so be there in that space, knowing that your mom was distracted a little bit. Be in your leotard and your tights. In your little 8 year old body, just really be in your body and look through your eyes. And even just before you get to your mom, just look at the room and just tell me what you see as you look through your 8 year old eyes in the room. What are some of the things there?
Well, I'm sure there was like, the TV was probably on, which is like pretty much a fixture when I was growing up. And like it's slightly cluttered and the furniture's a little worn. And that's all that sticks out at the moment.
Yeah, good, good. You're doing really well. So be there in your leotard and in your 8 year old body, looking out the living room and seeing your mom. And continue to be in your body as you ask her to help you with the choreography. And how does it feel in your body to ask her? even before you get the feedback, how does it feel in your body to ask your mom?
Oh, terrifying.
Yeah. So continue to feel into your 8-year-old body. And where do you feel that terrifying feeling in your body?
In my chest and like my throat.
Yeah.
Sort of closing off. Like it's hard to breathe.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Good. So I know sometimes we want to run away from that closing off feeling or scary feeling, but I want to just invite you to be with it. Like really be in your 8-year-old self, feeling that fear in your chest and your throat as you ask your mom. And then really be there as you ask her for the feedback and you receive what she says, the criticisms, you know, whatever it is. And how does it feel in your body as you receive her feedback?
All of my like life force energy, I can like feel it draining, like from my head all the way out through my toes.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Good. So I want you to be with that. Be in your 8-year-old body in the living room as that life force energy drains through your whole body, through your toes. Continue to look through your eyes at the room. And so this is that point where we're going to diverge from history, and anything can happen here. And so Sandra, as you continue to look through your eyes and feel into your body, if you could do or say anything, anything from the real to the fantastical, mm-hmm. You knew that it would be okay no matter what. What's the impulse here? What wants to happen next?
Okay, so the fantastical is okay. So my 8-year-old self is rather precocious and she wants to say like something like, well, thanks, Mom, but efficiency really isn't the point. And like, I really want to do this recital and I need help to choreograph it so that it's not so scary. Like I want to do it and it's scary.
Yeah, yeah, beautiful, beautiful. I love that you found that precocious part of you. And so what I want you to do, Sandra, is be in your 8-year-old body, look straight at your mom and say it the way your 8-year-old would say it. You don't have to say it out loud. Slow it down so that you're really in your body and see yourself saying this to your mother. And just let me know when you're done saying it to her in your 8-year-old way.
Okay.
How does it feel in your 8-year-old body to have just said that to your mom? Stay with it.
It's like a flash of energy. It's also, there's anger there too.
Yeah, good. Where is the energy and where is the anger? Feel into your body.
Kind of the same place, like from my stomach up through the, I want to say like up through the channel and then vocalize like out.
Yes. Good. Good. You're doing really well. Continue to stay with that. Be in your 8-year-old body and feel the energy and feel the anger. Really be there. Look through your eyes. What's the next impulse? If you could do or say anything from the real to the fantastical and you knew that it would be okay no matter what wants to happen next?
I want her to help me find the right support at the dance studio.
Yeah, So say that to your mom, slow it down and say it to her. Be in your body. And from that energy, that place of energy and anger, tell her that. And it's okay if you say it in an angry way. No matter what happens, it's okay. And just tell me what happens.
Yeah, so she like looks a little taken back, but she agrees.
Good. Be in your 8-year-old body, look at your mom agreeing. How does it feel in your body for her to agree?
Like a relief. It's like a relief, and then there's the like like suspended optimism.
Mm-hmm.
There's like always that catch with my mom of like, she'll say she's going to do something, right? But like, will she? So, but there is a sense of relief of like, oh, she heard me.
Where are you feeling the relief? Where in your body?
My throat, my shoulders, like I'm just like my whole body relaxed, my upper body relaxed.
Good. So first just breathe into that, breathe into that relief. And where are you feeling that suspended optimism?
My throat again.
Yeah. So breathe into that. And tell me if I'm getting this right. I feel like the suspended optimism has anger in there.
Yeah, I think there's also just like a really strong sense of disappointment.
Yeah.
I think, and I don't want to analyze it, but
yeah.
I just...
No, good. Okay, good. Good. So just feel that. And what I want you to do next is I want you to look through your mother's eyes. Go into your mom's body in this scene. And this is like the highest version of her. Be in your mom's body and look through her eyes at little, her daughter, at little Sandra, at her little one. And look through her eyes as she's just heard what she needs, what you need from her. And what does she see? What does she see as she looks at this little girl?
I think she sees that same like heartbreak that she sees every day where it's like she wants to do all of the things and finances were just so tight or are so tight that it's not a lack of willingness, but
yeah. Resources. So be in your mom's body and feel that. Feel that heartbreak and feel that desire to really be there for Sandra. Where does she feel that in her body?
Solar plexus.
Good. So continue to just breathe in there in the solar plexus. And from that place, being in your mom's body, what does she want to do next? If she could do anything, and it would be okay.
She kind of wants to throttle the teacher who suggested I do this without the support.
In the scene. With
in the scene.
Sandra, yeah, have her
look through her eyes, continue to look at little Sandra. What's her impulse?
Her impulse is to offer to watch the choreography again.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Yeah, perhaps make a different suggestion.
Uh-huh, good. So go back into your little body, your 8-year-old self. Look through your eyes. And watch and hear as your mother makes this offer to you. What do you see as you look at your mom? How does she look as she's saying this to you?
A little worn out.
Uh-huh. Good. What else?
She loves me.
Uh-huh. How does it feel in your body to see that?
It's a little intense. It's like, like 8-year-old self doesn't know what to do with that emotion.
Yeah. Okay, so this is a really important moment, Sandra. Just be in your 8-year-old body and see if you can take it in. Be her loving you and just lean in. You may or may not be able to, and whatever it is fine. But continue to see your mom making this offer and loving you and wanting this for you. See if you can take it into your 8-year-old body. Doesn't have to be fully. And just slow it down and take it in. What are you feeling in your 8-year-old body?
A sense of calmness.
Yeah. Where are you feeling that calm?
This is going to sound funny, but in my toes?
Uh-huh. Yeah, good. So continue to feel that calm in your toes. Really be in your 8-year-old body. Continue to see your mom. See her loving you. Feeling that calmness. Anything else that you're feeling? It's okay if not. I'm just wondering.
Yeah, there's like a sense of readiness to try again with the choreography.
Yeah, where are you feeling that readiness in your body?
Well, I think that's why it's in my toes. It's like I feel planted.
Uh-huh. I love that. Yeah. They want to dance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. So just continue to be with that calmness and that readiness in your toes. Just really let your 8-year-old body feel this new feeling. Especially feeling this way in front of your mom. And this may be a good place to end, but I'm just going to ask one more time. Is there an impulse to do or say anything?
There's an impulse to thank her and then, like, immediately take
take action, like take another stab with the choreography to like not wait.
Yes. Yes. Beautiful. So slow it down in the visualization and really be in your 8-year-old body and thank her, and then see yourself start to take action again. And just tell me how that feels once you do it.
That actually feels joyful.
Yeah.
Where are you feeling the joy in your 8-year-old body?
The crown of my head.
Nice. So just be with that joy in the crown of your head and that calm and that readiness in your toes. Spend just a few more moments with that. Beautiful, really well done. So you can let that go for now.
Mm-hmm.
How are you feeling right now?
A little lightheaded, I guess. good, I think.
Yeah. So just with the light, definitely drink. You're going to want to drink a lot of water today and eat. Like when we take a break, you just did some big energetic work.
Okay.
So now we get to kind of put our analyzing smarty pants hats on. And so tell me, Sandra, what did you see and learn through that experience? What's important for you in general and in terms of the imposter syndrome? What connections are you making?
Like it's okay to be a beginner at things, and it's also important to speak up when I need support.
Yes.
When I'm trying to do something new and I don't know how to do it, it's like natural to want to get support.
Yes. Yeah, what I loved, I mean, I loved so much of what you went through, but one of the things that just struck me so much was like that precocious part of you was right there under the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And that precocious part of you, I mean, you just had access to her so easily. It was like a minute into it and you were there already.
Mm-hmm.
And that precocious one actually knows how to ask for what she needs. And has no problem doing it and no shame in it at all.
Yeah.
The other thing that really struck me was that as you leaned into that precociousness, there was like a hint of anger there. It wasn't a rageful anger, but that like the anger that is about energy and fire and motivation.
Yeah.
You get that?
Yeah. It was a like the classic sort of boundary setting anger.
Yes. And again, that didn't like, we didn't have to dig too deep. That was right there for you.
Yeah.
And then the other piece that I really loved is that even though your 8-year-old self wasn't used to taking in love, that you were able to take that in a bit more. How did that feel? Like looking back on it now, what's your sense of that?
I mean, I think with my, you know, analytical hat on, I think some of the ways that, or instances where mom was colder than what I needed in the moment, it wasn't out of a lack of, care or feeling for me, but almost out of like sort of a sadness or like disappointment in herself that she couldn't provide the way she wanted to.
Yes.
Mixed so with like distraction of being a single parent, you know?
Yeah, totally. So this is actually, I think, really important in a place where you can continue to, one of the places you can continue to work with is like as a little girl, you took that as her not loving you and created like ideas around that. But now from like an adult perspective, you can see that it wasn't that at all, that she really cared
for you deeply, but there was some other stuff going on for her.
Yeah.
Awesome. Anything else you want to say about the experience?
I just wanted to acknowledge that I have this other distinct memory of kind of a similar thing repeating itself in high school. Mm-hmm. And realizing now that I actually made the decision before I talked to my mom because I had this preconceived idea that she just wasn't going to support me. But I could see myself being just as precocious in that situation and saying yes, I'm going to take summer school every year for the next 3 years because I want an advanced science degree or something like that, right? The precociousness is there.
Yes, it is there. And so it's so great that you're seeing that. So how can we apply that to the Ayurveda? The precociousness, the boundary setting, the asking for support, the anger, the readiness, as you just kind of lightly now look into what's in front of you with the Ayurveda, how are you feeling, first of all, around the imposter syndrome? Has that shifted in any way? It's okay if it hasn't, but I'm curious. And what are your thoughts around it?
I think a lot of the statements, because a lot of the statements I made earlier are all true. But I think there's more permission around just owning my position as a beginner.
Yeah.
I have to start somewhere.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Everybody does. Right.
Right. Yeah. So, and the thing about that body of work in particular is variety, repetition, conversation, and community all help you grow as a practitioner too.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. And not just in that body of work, in every body of work.
Yeah.
Good. And anything, are there any application, I don't know if there is, around the permission to ask for support?
Yeah, I think so. I've taken action on that already, which you and I've talked about. And, but I actually, there's a couple of other people sort of in my Ayurvedic circle who I could also reach out to. And I think I've been procrastinating that.
Awesome. Okay. So is that something you can do over the next week?
Yeah. I could text them on our break for that matter. yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. So I want to invite you to do that. And then the other thing I want to invite you to do is, so in the work that we just did, I think we unearthed some of that precociousness that we can see that can really serve you. And I think we got to another little piece around calmness in putting yourself out there, even when you're a beginner. Calmness and readiness, and I think that's an energy that can really serve you. Do you agree with all that?
Yeah, I do.
So I want you to practice it, right? Breakthrough versus transformation. We unearthed those energies today, but if it's possible, if you feel like you can, over the next week or two, I'd love for you to come back on your own to the end of the visualization, and all you have to do is feel that feeling in the crown of your head that you were feeling, and then in your toes.
Okay.
And just really be there. And there might be an impulse to do something next. I don't know, to start dancing or from the real to the fantastical, right? You can follow the image and see where it wants to go. But I'd love for you to come back to that. If you want a journal on it, that's a great supplement too. But let's kind of build the muscle of these new energies, these old energies that are now new that came through.
Yeah. Okay.
Sound good?
Yeah.
Awesome. Yay. Thank you, Sandra, for being willing to be our
pleasure. Leader. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm going to put my video back on. If you guys want to put your video back on, you can too. All right. So let's break this down. Is there a way to raise hands in Zoom? There must be, right? I know I've done that before and now I can't remember. Does anybody know how, if you use Zoom, you want to get off Zoom?
Click on participants. Uh-huh. Everybody click on participants, and then you can click on raise hand to raise your hand.
So anyone can raise their hand if they click on participants.
Yep.
I see. Yeah. Kendall just raised her hand. Awesome. Awesome. Okay. So what did you guys learn? What do you want to pull out of what Sandra and I just demoed? There are things that I want to share, but I want to hear from you first. What are you seeing? What are you learning? What do you have questions on? I was about to say star two. I always say star two, but instead raise your hand. Gwen.
All right.
Hi.
Well, I learned a lot, and I'm interested in hearing you sort of break down the process to see what I captured and, you know, what was important, right? Because in any process, depending on the client, there's going to be things that are, you know, different or deviate. So, you know, I'm looking forward to that. So the question I wrote down initially is, you know, when you're asking the client, okay, so now anything is possible. If you knew that you were going to be safe, what would you do or say, or what wants to happen next? I can imagine myself or clients wanting to have the mom do something different. You know, like I want my mom to give me a hug.
Yes.
And I did hear you kind of rephrase, like Sandra said something like that, and you were like, so tell her that. Tell her that you want her to support you more, or whatever it was. So I guess I was curious about that. And then the other piece that I was like, you know, what are the limits to what we can wish for in that moment? And the other thing I was really curious about was when you had her switch and start to be her mom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are all such great questions. So for the first, it's really like you picked up on a really subtle piece, but a really important one. It's always going to be more powerful if it can come from the individual, right? Like the action, the impulse is gonna come from you. But if the person really can't go there, you know, like, and ways to kind of get them there what I did with Sandra. So, you know, what is it that you ask for that? Right. What is your impulse? How do you want to, you know, and how does that feel? But if, they can't get over the hump in that way, there's nothing wrong with saying, okay, so see your mother do that. How does that feel? I think the important piece is less about what's going to happen in the visualization and more to get that feeling of the embrace, for example, in their body and that body memory. Now, when you do that, if you do it in that way, I think a lot of the times it'll work out. But some of the times they may say, you know, that doesn't feel genuine. And then you have to kind of go back in the other way around. What was the second question? I forgot the second question now.
When you had her switch, kind of whose eyes she was looking through.
Yeah. I could feel the reason why I did that. There are a couple of reasons. Number one, because I could feel in that experience that Sandra was still feeling really separate from her mom. And it felt like in order for her to get to the other pieces, she needed to feel a little more connected. And I knew that if she could see herself through her mom's eyes, and then if she could see her mom looking at her with that love, it would create more of the connection and more of the permission. That makes sense? Yeah, those are great questions. Thanks.
Yes, thank you.
Michelle. Oh, hold on. Oh, you keep on taking yourself off mute. And I put you go, take yourself off mute.
Ah, the control freaks, namely myself. Okay, I have a few questions, but hopefully they'll be quick. So it seems like with this process that you go through what is that young one seeing, you know, through their eyes and then their body. I kind of wrote in my notes, rinse and repeat. You just do it as many times as you need to until, like, as you see the new thoughts, visions forming, and this time allows, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'll repeat it in a couple of different instances. So one is just to continue to feel the feeling and to remind them. Sometimes I'll say it if I sense that the person is going a little bit more into their head. Mm-hmm. I'll give that, right? Like, I kept on giving that reminder because we are so often in our heads. Mm-hmm. And especially if you're doing this process with someone that is a coach or a healing practitioner or whatever, like we so often have our analysis hats on that it's actually harder. I feel like the smarter the person is and the more work they've done on themselves, you have to give them more reminders.
Okay.
And then the other instances when I'll do it is if I sense there's a new energy or emotion that is coming through.
Okay. Make That's sense? Kind of what I meant. Yeah. So, okay. That makes sense. My second question was, as we work with this way with ourselves and clients over time, right? A month, 6 weeks, I don't know, 3 weeks, whatever. It seems like one might need to keep going back and doing this work, correct?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, just the breakthrough, like the one experience is powerful. Sandra, we could see from the processing in the end, came away with lots of new ideas. She's ready to take action. I know she'll take action on that today and whatever. But if you want it to like really seal it in and really create the new neural pathways and body memories that are gonna stick, mm-hmm. you wanna come back to the practice of it.
And to the same memory in that practice?
Don't start it from the beginning, but the end feelings. And sometimes it's enough to just to feel it in the body. And then other times, like I suggested with Sandra, like you can play with to see where else it may want to go. Always journaling, you know, when we're on a call or in a session with a client, the container is tighter, and then whatever they do in between, the container is looser. And so that's why I always also like to suggest journaling to supplement it so that they can have the process time. And also writing, once you've created the new body and the new neural pathway, the writing can reinforce it in the body too.
Okay.
For some people, it's hard to go back to the memory, like without being held in the container with the coach. Mm-hmm. It's hard to go back to the visualization for some people. Mm-hmm. Definitely have them try it, and the writing also helps.
Okay. And then the last question, if you are going back with a client, I may have an answer, but if you're not, so for the clients who need the tighter container within the session, right? So you're going to have to go back to have them pull the story out. It's okay if there are slight shifts in the scene because they actually might remember more about what was going on as a young person, correct? And those new memories or the new bits of information actually might be very useful.
Yeah, I would never start from the beginning. Like, let's say our next session, we're going to keep on working on it. I'm not going to start from the beginning of the memory. I'm going to start somewhere close to where we ended off.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Or like it was great, you know, what Sandra was saying in the end about, oh, now this new memory from high school, even though a lot of the work that we did started to resolve that, mm-hmm. we can really work on that one.
I see.
And then the two will work kind of compound together to more body memory neural pathway.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm done now.
No, that's great. These are all awesome questions that everybody's asking. Good. Thank you. All right, Kalea.
Hi.
Hi.
Oops, can you hear me?
I can, and I can see you too. Hi.
Hi. So I love the questions that Michelle was asking. I found myself like wanting to hold Sandra. It was weird. Like I was, and it's like, my thought was like, she's got this. She was so composed through the experience. Like that was also what came up for me. What happens when the client goes to a memory that is abuse based? Because a lot of us have that. What do you do when it's beyond?
Yeah, so that's what I was saying in the beginning. Like, that's not for me, at least for me. I don't feel like that's in my scope. And so I won't, you know, if that is a memory that comes up, I'll say, you know, I don't feel like that's in the scope of our work. Is there another one, you know, whatever we're working on, imposter, confidence, you know, whatever. Yeah. Is there something else? But again, like for me personally, that's just not, I don't feel like it's an integrity for me to go there. And particularly,
yeah, I totally get it.
Particularly if it's over the phone too. I mean, in any event, and also especially over the phone.
I had a client do this where I touched a core button on something that was wanting to get worked through, and I did help her through it. It wasn't beyond my scope. I'm not a therapist, but I mean, she was hysterical on the phone. It touched such, and it wasn't an abuse memory, but it was her present time. Yeah. So when something like that happens, and then there isn't that opportunity to say, this is beyond my scope.
I mean, we all have triggers, right? And we all have things.
Yeah. And I triggered her.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, I think it depends situation by situation by situation, right? You know, of what's going on. So in some of those situations, I'm going to, first thing I'm going to do, especially if it's over the phone, right? If we're not face to face, I can see certain things if we're face to face, but if we're over the phone, just first thing I'm going to ask is like, do you feel like you're in your body right now? Right. And just pat down their legs. Right. Cause that's the first thing we want to make sure, if there's a lot of crying, that they're in. Right. And most of the time, if there are a lot of crying, they're going to be in their body anyway, but you want to check in on that. And then from there are going to be certain situations. Again, it all depends, where I'm going to say, good, this is so good that you're crying. You've needed to release this, right? Like this is cleansing. Yeah. Let's go.
Like, that's why I triggered her.
Yeah. The space, mm-hmm. right? There's mm-hmm. other situations where you know that the cleansing and releasing is over. And then it's your mm-hmm. job to get them, let's start breathing, let's get back in, you know, they're mm-hmm. in their bodies, but like, let's like really get in their bodies, you know, let's slow it down and get them in their heads. Get them in their heads.
Yeah.
What are you seeing here?
Okay.
What are you learning? Yeah. Get them to journal. Writing is something that can get you back, you know, in your body, and into that intellectual.
Yeah. Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure that I had done that, had that experience, because that was the experience I went through just intuitively. I think as women, we know intuitively how to help someone who's really in trouble. Do you know what I mean? I think we have that skill set, because most of us have had something, but I just wanted to ask you about like what happened. I haven't had anybody go into that abuse.
Right. And that's why, again, I'm saying like, that's my disclaimer. I don't feel of coaching.
Okay.
Yeah. Awesome. It's a great question.
Thank you. There was one other thing that Michelle asked that I wanted to ask about. Oh, around the journaling. When you have them, like for example, so let's say you take them through the breakthrough process, and then you know it's not the end, right? Like it's going to come back up, and you're going to help. There's going to be more stuff that comes through. And I understand, you know, you start somewhere kind of close to where you ended in the next call, right? When you're having them journal, what are you having them journal around? Like, I don't know if I'm putting too much pressure around the journal questions. I'm coming up with them mostly intuitively, but like, what would you have them journal around? What kind of questions?
It really depends situation by situation. And if you're working intuitively, that's great. But I mean, it can, yeah. You can ask them to do a dialogue, right? So I didn't think Sandra needed this, but I could have invited her to continue the dialogue with her mother, or she mentioned her mom wanting to throttle the teacher. You know, I could have asked Sandra to have a dialogue from her adult self, Sandra as an adult, what she would like to say to that teacher now, as angry as okay. she wants to be about it. And Sandra, if that's feeling inviting to you, that could be something fun, right? Because that was yeah. the throttling that she felt in her mom's body was actually her own anger. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. It does. Thank you.
Yeah. So you can get creative with it.
Good. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's see. I keep on seeing Nora, but it's actually Sharon. Sharon. can't hear you. You sound like a like a high-pitched Minnie Mouse or something. You're gonna type? Okay, well, I'll come back to you. Kendall.
Hello.
Hi.
So I was really curious to hear more about how you knew, like at the beginning you said, yes, I think this is a good memory to work with. And I was just curious to hear more about how you knew that. Is that because it came up so quickly for her, or did you feel something? That's what I'd love to hear more about.
It's a great question. So a combo of a couple of things. So the way that you know it's a good memory is, number one, like it did come up and she seemed animated about it. She was like, oh, right. And she described it in detail. And it is probably, you know, I was guessing like it was around the time from, we could always do a memory from a year ago and that will still be very powerful. But if it's from a time where that impulse first got buried, it's always going to be juicy. And it also seemed to me directly related to the imposter syndrome as she was describing what happened there. So all of those things had me think, ah, this could be really good.
Okay, cool. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Good question. Monisha.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, hi.
Oh, hi. Okay, great. So my question is actually at the other end of the spectrum of this process. So, you know, I guess my question is, following the energy flow, you know, there was precociousness, there was anger, there was intensity, then we went into calmness, you know, and joy. So I guess my curiosity is in your experience, in terms of understanding where to take the process and where not to drop off too early, is it your experience that you typically try to, and I know it's going to differ depending on the situation, but, you know, I noticed at one point, like, she felt relief, and I guess, you know, there's a default part of my brain that's like, oh, that's a positive, you know, maybe we would end there. So I'm just curious kind of what is your experience with the energy flow? Does it usually, like how many layers in, you know, do you kind of go?
Yeah, it's such a good question. Let me see if I can answer it. So when Sandra mentioned that she felt the relief, she also said there was the suspended optimism. And so that let me know that it wasn't done, because that suspended optimism was still there. There was still pieces there. If the suspended optimism hadn't been there, I don't think I would have just ended it right then. I think I would have gone deeper into the relief and just seeing what else was there and kind of, you know, pushing her a little bit to lean even more into that. But it was the suspended optimism that let me know. And you know, some of it is, you know, like any coaching session that can go in a lot of different directions, these can go in a lot of different directions too. So I could have made the choice as the practitioner, like when Sandra mentioned the anger, I know because I know Sandra and I've done anger work with her, like I know that she's working on her anger stuff and we didn't need to necessarily lean in more there, but that was a place where I could have had her lean in a little bit more, you know, like, and really kind of say, like, if really with the anger, if you could do or say anything from the real, you know, sometimes I might make a suggestion, even if I, because especially with something that feels icky to people, like anger, or they feel like it's a bad thing, I may root them on a little bit. Like I may say, you know, it's in the safe space, you would never do it. But if like the impulse is to slap your mother, right? So I'm, you know, with someone else, I may have leaned in more to the anger and seen what was there because I know Sandra's working on it. And then it came up with the throttling anyway, which was a good to like feel that again, right? So there's lots of different pathways. Is that helpful?
I that's super helpful. And I also just love how, I mean, ultimately it does feel like it is all connected because these, you know, pieces show up in different ways. And I especially loved when she said, oh, this is going to sound funny, but it's in my toes. And my body immediately went, she's a dancer. Of course she's going to feel it in her toes. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. I was slower on that until she said the dancing. I didn't get that. Tanya.
Okay, am I unmuted?
Yeah, I can hear okay. You.
So what I was just wondering or musing about is that often what happens, and I'd love to hear what your take on it is that like what happens when I work with people who are not coaches or haven't done this kind of visualization or aren't as comfortable with that yet. Like I find that they're just like more uncertain about their answers. Like, is this right? Or, you know, like, I don't know. And like, to keep like pulling them back in, like how much do you, like, I recently even had someone who had no idea like what to wish. Like maybe to us it feels so obvious, like, well, wish for a hug or wish for your mom to really give you validation. But like, what if they're not even really sure where you're trying to take them with this? Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah. 100%. Okay, so a couple of things on it. First of all, it's such a great question. So first of all, I always tell people like you're doing a good job, there's no wrong answer. You know, all of that, like what if you could guess at what the impulse would be? So all of that. Mm-hmm. Number two, I want to be clear, like there is, when I go, I've learned this the hard way. When I go into this, I actually don't have an agenda. I mean, I might, but I have to check my filter and realize that it's my agenda. Mm-hmm. I've noticed after doing this for so long that when I want a particular thing to happen in the thing, it's usually not as rich as what wants to happen. So that's important. But then that being said, if you have someone who even after you've encouraged or asked them to guess or, you know, it's all right or whatever, if they're just still having trouble, you can make some suggestions, right? And say like, I'll just tell you some things that if I put myself in that image, some of the things that come to mind for me.
Yeah.
Do one of these feel like you want to experiment with this? There are no wrong answers here.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, that sounds aligned for me too. Great.
Awesome. Good. You're welcome. All right, back to you, Sharon. Hold on, let me find you here. There we go.
Is this any better?
Oh, so much better.
So my question is, can you do this if it's a situation that really only involves a client and relationship? I'm thinking about a client I have who had cancer, is carrying around a lot of anger about. We haven't looked at it too much, but she's indicated she wants to talk about it. So could, and I know I can do befriend your fear and other things we've learned, but can you use this kind of visualization with someone who may not have the mother or another person who did something that kind of blocked them in some way, like happened here?
I want to make sure I'm understanding correctly. So she has like a fear with the cancer?
No, she has a lot of anger around having cancer, and I haven't delved into it completely, so I can't tell you much more than that. Uh-huh. But it's something she wants to work through. She's carrying around this feeling. And I know that I can, you know, we've used some of the other techniques that you've taught us to help her look at it and accept it rather than fighting it. But what I'm wondering, it seems like this particular exercise needs a second person in it that you're interacting with. And I wonder if that's true, or can you use it if the person is just sort of interacting with themselves?
I don't think it's, I don't, it's all, yes, it's always more effective if there's another person. You can do it on your own, you know, if it's just one. But in the situation that, the specific situation that you're talking about, my intuitive sense without knowing any details is that this wouldn't be the process. I think the process would first be helping create a safe container for her to really express her anger. And that can be leading her, even before the befriend part, like leading her through a dialogue with cancer. And you can maybe even anthropomorphize it, you know, have it bring it down into human form or animal form or something like that. And just first give her a container to release the anger. She can do that through journaling as well. And then from there, I'd move her into the befriend process.
Yeah, and that's what I would normally do. Yeah. I just wondered if this applied in a different kind of situation, but it doesn't. So I just wanted to check that, yeah.
Yeah,
you really need another person. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm glad you asked. Kalea, I'm not sure if you that your hand is raised from before or you're raising your hand again. Just let me know.
It's new.
Oh, great.
I have a question, obviously, I'm pausing that I hope this isn't a silly question because you know I do that, but I feel like this has been such a deep dive of learning. Like, there's so much, like we've talked about this before with everybody, there's so much for us to learn. Does it feel true that it's like a series of containers, like to know, like this is the container, like it's the shadow container, that's what we're going to work through, or it's the release container, or it's the befriending your fears. And we're not going to say that language necessarily to them, but to understand, oh, like this is what they really need right now. Is that feel true? Like that's part of what helps us know, like what to pick, like what process is best going to serve this client right now?
Yeah. I'm trying to put myself, like, I'm trying to slow it down and see how I approach it. Sometimes it's intuitive, yeah. Right? So sometimes it's not thinking in that way. But yeah, like sometimes I'll say to myself, what do I sense this client needs? Not what process do I sense this mm-hmm. client needs? That's not helpful, but more what is it that my client needs? Do they have is there a belief here that needs rewiring? Is there a fear? Is there a shadow piece? You know, and this is just one way to work with shadow, right? But so I think I'm always, yeah. Whether I realize it or not, I'm asking, what do I sense my client needs? If I don't know,
yeah.
My client, and then kind of picking the process based on that.
That's really helpful. Sorry, I got the chills because yeah, that makes so much sense to just do it that way.
Yeah. And also, like, some of
thank
it is
you very
how much time you have too, right? Like, I can because I've practiced at this, I can get into this when there's 20 minutes left in a session, 22 minutes left, and try to do a quickie. But like, you know, until you're really practiced in it, if you've got 15, 20 minutes left in a session, you're not going to start with this. You're going to save it for the next time, right? So it's also, sometimes it's about time too.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That makes sense. That's helpful.
Good. Okay. I want to share some other pieces and pull out some other pieces. Leah, you've got a question.
Yeah. I was just going to say to the last point, like the thing that helps me, and it's a little bit hard because I used to get tripped up around it, was like thinking through, where does this person need to go? Right. Like the whole, what's the belief that needs to be unlocked, or what's the thing that's helping them be stuck, or what's the emotion here that's not being honored or released, or something like that. And that's kind of more of my like bridge versus process as well.
Yes, agreed. Yeah, I think whenever you go with the process, or at least for me, and especially with this one, because it's such a crowd pleaser, I don't want to think like, what's the process? Because then I'm not getting to the deeper, like, what is it that they need? It might, based on that, they may need the process, but I want to kind of like understand first on a content level, where do I need to take the client? Good. All right, so some practical pieces that I want to pull out around this. Did you guys notice that I asked permission before we went in, right? So that's really important. You know, do you want to do deeper work around this? You know, do you feel like you want to? I always just like to get, you know, you're never going to just kind of go into this process without saying like something, right? Or I have a process that I think could really help. You know, do you want to do some deeper work? And that can be before you get to the memory or after the coaching through the memory, right? But you want to ask for permission. You want to take the time, like I did with Sandra. Sometimes somebody will call up a memory and it doesn't feel, and Kendall asked about this, like, it doesn't feel like the right one to me for some reason. And so I'll never say, oh, that's not right. But I'll say like, oh, that's really juicy, or, you know, whatever. And do any other memories come up, right? So I'm just trying to kind of get like sift through and see. When you bring them in, you want to talk about the smarty pants thing, whatever your languaging is. But before you even go in, you need to tell them to kind of turn their analyzing mind off, and that look and feel, you know, look and feel, see and feel, and that you're going to be reminding them of it. The other thing you want to tell them as you go in is, we're going to, or else they're going to get really confused. So this is an important piece. You always want to tell them before you go into it, we're going to start with a memory that happened in real life, but at some point we are going to diverge from that memory, and anything can happen. You don't need to know when yet. I'll let you know when that moment happens, but it will happen. And then I want you to actually not go with the status quo of what would have happened in that memory. We're gonna find new possibilities there. Cognitively, people need to hear that first before they go in. When you first go in, as a way of getting your clients settled, and as a way of like getting them into the seeing and feeling, you want to ask questions like I asked Sandra, like, what did you look like when you were 8? Describe, you know, what were you wearing? What do you see just in the room? So you want to really bring them to that place. Look, and did you notice I kept saying, look through your eyes, look through your 8-year-old eyes. Just, you want to keep on reminding that. When you ask your client, how does that feel? You don't want to end there. You want to say, where does that feel? And where do you feel that in your body? That's an important piece, because you want to pause there for a moment, right? It's not just like, okay, they have this feeling, but you want to, like, in order to really unearth it, you want to pause in it. Oh, you feel that in your chest. Okay, good. Take some breaths there in your chest. Really feel it in your chest. Feel it. Now, here's something that I've learned also the hard way. Let's say the feeling is uncomfortable. Like, where Sandra first went, you know, that tightness, I forget exactly how she described it now, but the tightness in her chest and her throat, what you don't want to do is say, take some deep, long, big breaths into your chest and your throat. If you do that, that can help alleviate the terror or the tightness. I mean, in a way, that's good, right? But it's not actually helping them settle into how it felt in the memory. So you just, if you're someone especially that leads people through like calming and grounding visualizations, you want to make sure you're not throwing out your calming, grounding tools when you know, so that they can feel purely what the feeling is there. I let her know again when we were gonna diverge. I clearly said, okay, now is the moment where we're going to diverge from history. And if you could do or say anything from the real to the fantastical, what is the impulse? What wants to happen here? I always spell that out. And then if you noticed, the other thing that I did was ask her to slow it down, right? Because oftentimes someone will say, okay, the impulse is to punch her in the face. Ask them to slowing it down helps them be in their body and feel the feelings, the release, the cleansing, whatever is going to be from whatever the action is. So have that, or when they're speaking it too, even if they say, you know, what I want to say is blah, 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 right? Sandra did that. I said, okay, good. Now be in your body and slow it down and say it. You do sometimes want to use that trick of going into the other person's body and looking through. I like to do that particularly if it's a moment where I know love is ready to happen or deeper connection. And I'll always say it's the person's higher self, but that it can be really powerful there. Another little trick that I have is if your client has someone that's really special to them, if they have kids, their kids, but it can be someone else too. Sometimes like at the height of like they've just done something new in the visualization, as a way for them to be witnessed, I'll say now call your daughter in. And look through your daughter's eyes at her mama who's just spoken her truth. How does it feel in your daughter's body to see her mom speak her truth? So what that does is it creates like a witnessing, but also whatever she's going to feel in her daughter's body is just a reflection of her witnessing herself. And then, of course, once the visualization is done, as I did with Sandra, you're going to want to process it out, ask them to put the analyzing hat on, what are they seeing and learning, add your own thoughts to it, you know, and process and bring it back to the original, right? Did you guys notice? I didn't just leave it in the memories. Okay, so now let's lightly look at this imposter syndrome with the Ayurveda, right? So you always want to bring it back. And, you know, I always, you guys know, it's, I think what is most powerful is inner married with outer. So then what are some also concrete actions that can happen? Questions, takeaways, anything else you guys are seeing or wanting right now? We're going to take a break in a few minutes.
So I have a thought. I think it was really helpful to hear you articulate it, but also experientially to like witness as my 8-year-old self what my mom was going through. Like, it wasn't just the switching. I'm trying to articulate. It's not just the switching, but like switching back and then witnessing the shift. That was the key part, because you could switch and then kind of switch back. But like, if you don't pause there to witness what, like from a different perspective, from that like omniscient almost perspective, then it wouldn't have had the same kind of magical quality.
Yes, 100%. So what Sandra is referring to, if you guys remember, it's not just that I had her go into her mom's body and see and feel, I had Sandra then come back to her own body and see her mother feeling that and looking at her with that love. That's the seal it in moment there. Good. I'm glad you're pulling that out. That's an important piece. Awesome. Anyone else? Leah, is that your hand up from before? Or is that new hand up?
It's from before, but it works perfectly. I mean, I've done this process with you, obviously, one-on-one, and it was a memory of my dad. And what was really powerful for me was kind of the similar moment where Sandra flipped into her mom's eyes and could see, like, have empathy for her mom instead of just feeling like she was attacked or there was just one piece of the story. And a personal mantra that I have and that I also use with my clients is, like, if you're blaming yourself for everything that happened, you're only seeing part of the story. Like, you haven't fully healed yet. You haven't seen the whole thing. Yeah. And so those are very essential moments, like, that really take it to another level. Cause for me, I like floated up into the clouds and I did a whole bunch of other stuff that was different. And
yeah, you got into the fantastical.
it wasn't just that. It wasn't just the feeling that I had afterwards, because the action that we did was that I worked on feeling that feeling every day and reconnected with it in my body. But it was like the integrative thing to see that my like dad wanted to still lean into me. He wasn't just upset with me. There was more about why he made the reaction he did that felt not fair or whatever for me. So there's a wholeness that you get to experience that's hard to articulate. That's like very, very essential to like taking the sting, I guess I would say, out of the memory.
Yeah, I'm really glad you're bringing that forward. It's so true, and it is one of the powerful pieces. And it's one of the reasons is because when we can feel empathy for others, we have more empathy for ourselves too. It's like it's all in a continuum in a way. So I'm glad you're sharing that. Thank you, Kalea.
Hi, this is a bit hard to articulate, but it feels like it's around the kind of a bigger view of what we're talking about just as a whole is when you talked about, you know, when you have an intention for a process, it doesn't ever work. Like, it's just never as full and powerful and rich as it, if you're like, okay, I'm going to go here, I'm going to put them here. So ultimately, I mean, if we have the intention, let's just say that we have the intuition or the wisdom and we can sense this, like you were able to choose, this is the right memory. Like, you could feel it, or however your process is, like, this is the right memory. And so you have the intention to support that client to doing the work that's going to liberate her now, right? That's going to heal and liberate her now. How do you, you know, be in that space of, I mean, is it simply this sense of, I'm here to hold space and direct her masterfully and guide her and allow her to have her adventure and her experience, as opposed to trying to lead her to this spot? Right.
Yes, 100%. So every, like when Tanya was asking for, like, sometimes people need help, right? And so I'll steer again, and especially, I feel like people especially need help when it comes to anger or unsavory feelings that they're trying to pretend like they don't have. I'll say, like, if, you know, when I put myself, like I said before, when I'm putting myself here, I just want to punch her out, or, you know, I mean, or whatever it is, right? But beyond that, you know, as you were asking the question, it reminded me of recently I did this process with a client, and this actually speaks to Sharon's question too. So I'm glad I'm remembering this. I was doing this process with a client. And it was around visibility in her business, which often seems to start there. Anyway, we were looking at a memory from high school and school, and something happened on a soccer field, whatever it was. And then at one point I said, if you could do or say anything next, it would be okay no matter what, you know, what would it be? And she said, I would just walk away by myself to a hill. And there was a part of me internally first that was like, there's not going to be anyone else there. Like, she's just going to a hill. I don't know. But we went with it, and she walked to the hill, and I had her slow it down, and I asked her, you know, and how does it feel as you're in your body? Well, I think she was 14, in your 14-year-old body as you're walking away. And it was like freedom and all this stuff. And she got to the hill, and, you know, all of this happened. And I actually thought it was going to end there. And then she said, oh, my boyfriend at the time, you know, for whatever he was, he's here too, waiting for me. And he kind of symbolized like the love and validation that she was needing, you know. And so if I would have stopped it there and guided her to not go off and walk away on her own, she wouldn't have had any of that beautiful experience in the process. Is that helpful?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think it's just it's also what you've taught us about taking our filters off ultimately, right? It's like that, I want her to go here, but her.
Yes, we can't ever take them off, but checking them, right?
yes, yeah. Fair enough, right?
Yeah, awesome.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm all pink.
You look.
I must have a pink filter on.
It looks nice. Okay, great. Well, on my clock, Eastern time, it's a little after 12:45. Let's take a half hour break and come back at 1:15. And we're going to start, we're going to practice. You guys are going to practice the process. So I'll lead you through how you're going to do that when we come back. But let's take a break and come back at 1:15. I'll see you guys then.
highly unlikely. So I'm trying to stay calm with it, but. I have no life here. I'm busy with my family. And then when I get back next week, you know, I'm jammed. Do you know how bad the Wi-Fi is on planes?
No, they're that's a very old.
Yeah,
Scarface is not.
Oh my god, that's Derek. Where are we? Thank you.